From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Good afternoon and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, the Commission on Unalienable Rights, created in July by Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, held its first public meeting today. The Secretary joins us in just a moment to explain the importance of the Commission in America's foreign policy. And why the shroud of secrecy around the Democrats' impeachment inquiry? Congressman Jody Heiss of Georgia joins me to explain the question, where's the transparency in due process? And nearly 900 abortion clinics have lost federal funding thanks to the Trump administration's Title 10 family planning rule. Connor Simmelsberger, FRC's legislative assistant, joins me in studio to discuss this pro-life victory. And starting next month, Family Research Council will be launching a new men's ministry, Stand Courageous. General Jerry Boykin joins me in studio to discuss this much-needed challenge to men to be men. For more information, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. Under episode resources, you can find out more about today's program. If you're on Twitter, it's at T Perkins. All right, in a Wall Street Journal op-ed column, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo wrote, quote, America's founders defined unalienable rights as including life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. They designed the Constitution to protect individual dignity and freedom, a moral foreign policy should be grounded in this conception of human rights, end quote. That's why in July, Secretary Pompeo announced the creation of the State Department's Commission on Unalienable Rights, which held its first public hearing today. Now, unfortunately, shortly after the July formation of the commission, 400 liberal groups and current and former elected officials sent a letter to Pompeo objecting to its purpose. Join me now to talk about this important work is the Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo. Since his teenage years and as a West Point cadet, he's seen how special the American conception of freedom and human dignity is to the entire world. Secretary, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, it's great to be with you again. Thanks for having me on the show today.
Absolutely. I want to thank you for having the courage to move forward with something I think is foundational to our foreign policy, but not everybody thinks so. You've gotten a lot of pushback on the creation of this commission.
Yeah, Tony, we have, and it's unfortunate. This is a commission that has a set of commissioners from a broad political perspective, different faith traditions, all aimed at something that I think every American can agree to, which is our conception that our founders put in place of the protection of human life and dignity is central to America's well-being and our exceptionalism as a nation, and indeed our beacon for the entire world. And what we're hoping to do is to take this idea of rights, which sometimes becomes confusing or turns into simply personal or political preferences, and reground it in the history and tradition of the United States, so that we are moored to something more than someone's fancy of the moment, and we come to understand that these incredibly cherished fundamental rights are at the very core of the American experience.
I mean, as I see this, Mr. Secretary, I mean, there are over a certain period of time, you may need to recalibrate just to make sure that your compass points to true north. And I think what you're doing is you're pointing back to these founding documents and tying our foreign policy to a foundation that goes back to the very beginning. And, you know, there have been times in our nation's history where we've deviated from that. And it's important that we come back.
Tony, that's absolutely the case. It's the among the purposes of this commission. We have deviated from time to time. We've become confused, not just here in the United States, but around the world. You see something as hypocritical as the government of Venezuela being appointed a seat on the UN Human Rights Commission.
Yeah.
I mean, this is untethered to anything left, right, center in America would understand as decent and right and protecting human dignity. If you observe what's going on in Venezuela today, you can see that it's the antithesis of the protection of individual liberty and freedom and the rights that we all know. And so we're trying to cut back to the roots to make sure that everyone is grounded in this tradition. And I will tell you, around the world, people are watching the work that our commission is undertaking. There is a thirst for this work, and I think this will be a document that is prepared, a commission chartered by the United States Department of State, but one that I think citizens all around the world will be able to hold up when their human rights, when their fundamental rights are being challenged, they'll be able to hold up this document and point to this important work that's been done.
I want to go back to something you just said a moment ago, because you made this point in a speech yesterday at the Heritage Foundation, where you talked about how there has been a perversion of the word right for nefarious means, that people have taken that, in my words, not your words, but used it like silly putty, stretched it and distorted it to use for things that it was never intended to be used for.
Tony, it's true, and this has at least two outcomes that are bad. One is that you'll end up with people asserting rights that we all know are fundamentally at odds with the most fundamental ideas that come out of not just Christianity, but all the Abrahamic faiths.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the first problem. The second one is that when other rights are added into the mix, when you use the word right for something that is a mere preference, then there's focus and attention and energy applied to preserving and protecting that thing called a right. And that comes almost necessarily at the expense of the fundamental rights. If you're enforcing and protecting everything all the time,
right,
you lose sight of the focus and the things which are truly central to human dignity, the capacity for individuals to express their own conscience, and the things that you and I, and I think nearly every American has come to understand as those rights which are most fundamental, just simply as a result of our humanness.
So, I mean, in essence, what you do is you dilute your strength, your power, your ability to focus on those essential rights, and as a result, everyone suffers.
That's it. You have it precisely right.
Let me talk for a moment in terms of the outcome. And you made reference, you want a document that people can hold up, not just here in the United States, but around the world, and point to this document of unalienable rights. What's the time frame? And what is the anticipated outcome?
So the process started with our first public meeting today, although the commissioners have been reading and preparing for today in the anticipation of what we would kick off. There'll be a handful of other meetings. They're public. We welcome everyone to join us for these meetings. There'll be an opportunity for the public to speak, many of them as well. So there'll be a transparent, open process where I think the world will see how thoughtful we consider the work that we do. We're hoping to wrap up by the middle of next year. And when we do that, we'll have a document. We will have this tangible expression of what it is the commission concludes are indeed these fundamental human rights and why they matter so much to America. And I think then others in the world will see it benefits them as well. But we will also then go out and share this vision with people all across America and all across the world, so they can come to understand that this exceptional nation here in the United States is not embarrassed by the fact that we cherish those fundamental rights which our Creator has provided for us.
Mr. Secretary, one of those fundamental human rights is one that this administration and you, as Secretary of State, have been very diligent to both protect and promote, and that is the issue of religious freedom. It has become a top foreign policy initiative of this administration, led by the President, the Vice President, and you as Secretary of State. I was watching you last week when you were with the Vice President in Turkey negotiating the ceasefire, and was encouraged by both your comments and by the Vice President's comments when it pertained to religious freedom and religious minorities in northeast Syria. And I want to get your sense of that. What was taking root there in northeast Syria was unique in the Middle East, true religious freedom, the ability to not just worship as you choose, but to choose your faith and to live it out. What are the prospects for that continuing to prosper in that region of the world?
Tony, I'm glad you asked about this. This is the problem set in northeast Syria is, as you know, incredibly complicated. But one of the things that the president had directed and then Vice President and I worked diligently on as part of our effort to convince the Turkish leadership to stop their incursion into northeast Syria. One of the things we were very focused on, if you read the joint statement, you'll see that it was agreed to, was to ensure that there was, in fact, the very protections that you described. And that's good. That is important. It's a good start. We need to make sure that we have the words and the commitments on paper. But as you know, Tony, something that this administration has worked very hard on is the rights, not just in northeast Syria, but throughout the Middle East, in Iraq, in the north, where Yazidis and Christians are incredibly challenged, in the cradle where Christianity has a long and deep history. It's under threat. It's under attack. We've appropriated a great deal of money. The State Department works tirelessly on behalf of protecting the rights of religious minorities in Syria and Iraq and throughout the Middle East. There's a lot of work left to be done. We've made some progress, but there remain many challenges.
Well, it's certainly one that will not only be a focus of foreign policy, but I hope for Americans a source of prayer, because I think those folks there are looking to America for encouragement and for strength. And it was a source of hope to see that light of freedom burning there in the Middle East. And Mr. Secretary, I know your time's short, you got to go, but I do want to just again thank you. And as I talked to the president a week before last, just appreciate the continued focus on religious freedom and its fundamental and essential part that it plays in both our domestic and foreign policy.
Tony, thank you. We're committed to it. It's something that we work on each and every day. And something that we know advances America's values all around the world and makes makes lives all around the world just a little bit better each and every day.
All right. Mr. Secretary, thanks so much for joining us.
Tony, thank you, sir. So
all right. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. This is important work, and I have to tell you this. Full disclosure, I've known Secretary Pompeo since he first came to Congress as a member of the House from Kansas. And a solid man of faith, but also a man of courage, which is what I admire most when it comes to Christians who are willing to stand up and take the heat. And he takes a lot of it. And this commission that he's created is extremely important in not just, you know, the policies for today, but shaping policies for tomorrow, which is what is driving the left crazy. So pray for him. Pray for him, and obviously, as we mentioned, pray for the Christians in the Middle East and in northeast Syria in particular. All right, folks, don't go away. A lot more Washington Watch to come. We'll be joined by Jody Heiss right after the break to talk about the secrecy that is shrouding the Democrats' impeachment investigation. What's going on? Where's full disclosure? Where's transparency? We're going to talk about that with Jody Heiss right after the break. Don't go away. More Washington Watch to come.
We live in a time of great political division, and this division only intensifies during campaign season. The toxic tone in politics can be discouraging, which makes it a very real temptation for many Christians to wipe their hands of politics altogether. After all, if God is sovereign and controls the heart of the king, as Proverbs says, do we really need to get involved in the messy world of politics? Because political engagement can be divisive, shouldn't Christians abandon politics and direct their energies toward more spiritual pursuits? Christians are called to submit every area of their life to God, which includes how they engage in politics. But they are called to engage biblically. This requires Christians to be prepared to follow their political theology to its logical end and vote for candidates and parties that support clear biblical values. For more information on the Christians' call to engage in politics, visit frc.org/engage. That's frc.org/engage.
News. We can get it from many sources, but what can you trust these days? Where can you get news that doesn't make you as suspicious as you are informed? If you're looking for something better, for honest coverage of the latest news, one trusted news source I look to is the Washington Times. When preparing for the radio program and selecting guests to join me on the show, I will often read the Washington Times and have their reporters join me here on the program because I trust how they cover the news. Join me and more than 7 million readers who turn to the Washington Times every month to get real, trusted news. For a limited time only, listeners of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins will receive a special annual rate of $69.95 for the first year. Subscribe to the Washington Times and get this special offer by using my name and visiting washingtontimes.com/Tony Perkins. That's washingtontimes.com/Tony Perkins.
Radical abortion laws in New York, Illinois, and Vermont are challenging the sanctity of life. These laws have lifted the few existing restrictions on abortion in the name of family planning and mental health of pregnant mothers. Americans need to take a stand and defend the rights of the unborn. Family Research Council is sending Congress 90,000 baby hats as a reminder that babies should be welcomed with love and warmth, not potential danger. Supporters have already funded over 45,000 hats. We are over halfway there. Join Americans across the nation and donate $9 to send a powerful reminder that young lives need to be cherished. When you take action, we'll send you an end birthday abortion certificate that will remind you to pray for born alive babies who are facing the danger of being killed outside the womb. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com for more information. That's endbirthdayabortion.com.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us. The website, TonyPerkins.com, if you're on Twitter, at T Perkins. All right, the acrimony on Capitol Hill could be reaching an all-time high as House Republicans attempted to enter a closed-door impeachment hearing earlier today. Now, it is being widely reported in the press that the Republican lawmakers were doing so in protest of the impeachment hearings. But those lawmakers say that's not true. They are protesting the secrecy that is surrounding non-classified hearings. Now, I just got word, Congressman Jody Heiss, who was in this impeachment hearing earlier today, has been pulled back in. But stepping in for our good friend Jody Heiss is Idaho Congressman Russ Fulcher, who represents the first district of the Idaho, the potato state, and was one of the dozen of the House members who entered the Democrats' secret impeachment hearing earlier today. Congressman Fulcher, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, thank you so very much. And there was actually about 30 of us that went into that room.
Well, explain what happened and what happened subsequently to you walking into the room.
So this started just prior. There was about 30 of us that had a press conference. And what we were doing in that press conference was objecting to the secrecy by which these hearings were being conducted. These meetings were being held in the SCIF room, which is the secured room. Only the chairman identifies witnesses, the minority. Members cannot identify witnesses. Cross-examination is limited. Only the members of that specific committee are allowed. The transcripts cannot be released. The members that are there can't talk about it outside. And by the way, this is all a non-classified meeting. In other words, the chairman Schiff had mentioned that nothing was going to be conveyed in this meeting that was classified. Yet myself and the other 29 members that were having this press conference, we're all members of Congress, and we're going to be expected to vote on this. And so we have a problem with that. So we were having a press conference just on the secrecy. After that, we decided, you know what, let's just go over to the secured room. And so we did. And we were greeted by security, and they said, no, you can't enter. And we actually said, you know what, we're members of this body. And we're going to have to vote on the content of what's being discussed in here. It's non-classified. yes, we can. And so we just walked past them and we went in. Upon the entry, Mr. Schiff stood up, took his witness, and left.
Now, I understand. Just to put this in context for our listeners, there are some classified briefings which only members of those committees can participate in. A regular hearing, a non-classified hearing, any member of Congress generally can walk into the committee room and listen to the testimony. Is that correct?
Correct.
So in this case, as you said, it was stated no classified information was going to be dealt with. This was not a classified hearing. But they quickly pick up the witness takeoff when you come into the room. But then I understand also that some have been saying that they were going to file ethics charges against the Republican members for coming into the room.
Yeah. So and there's one other part that I would add to it. Not only was it non-classified and non-specific committee members not invited or allowed, but there's also absolutely zero commitment that we would ever see evidence, that we would ever see a transcript, that we would ever be briefed, that we would ever have access to what transpired in these meetings. Yet we will be asked to vote. We will be asked to make a judgment with that vote. But to follow up on the point you just made, yes, after the chairman left, took his witness, left, Representative Jordan from Ohio stepped into the side room to meet with or have a discussion with Chairman Schiff about the situation, and he was sent back with a message from Chairman Schiff that those of us who had entered the room were potentially going to be threatened with an ethics violation. So not only did this process occur in a non-classified setting in a secure room where members of Congress were, I would argue, doing their job by trying to get informed on something they were supposed to be voting on later, but we get threatened with an ethics violation for it. So this is simply being conducted in an extremely one-sided way. It is without precedent. The Clinton proceedings, the Nixon proceedings, were not handled at all like that. In those cases, both the majority and the minority were allowed to call witnesses, to cross-examine. It was open to members. It was the transcripts were available. None of that is the case here.
Congressman Fulcher, let me ask you this question. My observation, based upon what's been leaking out of some of these hearings, is that maybe the reason your presence is not wanted in those investigations, hearings, whatever you want to call them, is that it'll be much more difficult for the majority to put a spin on what they're hearing if there are other members of Congress that are there to correct that spin.
I think that's a very good point. Representative Scalise, he's on our leadership team from Louisiana, had made the statement, and I haven't personally validated that, but he's usually pretty accurate. He had made the statement when we were talking about this internally that approximately 90% of the majority party, which is the Democrats right now, in one form or another, have already stated they support impeachment. And that's before any hearings ever started. And we know that the chairman does, because he said that openly many times. And if the chair is saying that and conducting these meetings in a controlled way, that's a sign that this is not being handled fairly, and that's why we did what we did.
Well, Congressman Fulcher, I appreciate you joining us at kind of a last-minute notice to step in and fill us in on what took place today. It shows, I'm not sure they really want to get to the truth. They want to just have their own truth. At least they want to call it the truth. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
All right, folks, don't go away. I think this next topic may give you some reason as to the animosity against this president, the fact that they'll stop at nothing to try to push him from office, the fact that your tax dollars are going to fewer and fewer abortion clinics. That's next. Don't go away.
Radical abortion laws in New York, Illinois, and Vermont are challenging the sanctity of life. These laws have lifted the few existing restrictions on abortion in the name of family planning and mental health of pregnant mothers. Americans need to take a stand and defend the rights of the unborn. Family Research Council is sending Congress 90,000 baby hats as a reminder that babies should be welcomed with love and warmth, not potential danger. Supporters have already funded over 45,000 hats. We are over halfway there. Join Americans across the nation and donate $9 to send a powerful reminder that young lives need to be cherished. When you take action, we'll send you an end birthday abortion certificate that will remind you to pray for born alive babies who are facing the danger of being killed outside the womb. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com for more information. That's endbirthdayabortion.com.
Hello, this is Tony Perkins, President of the Family Research Council here in Washington, D.C. I want to invite you to join Luana and myself, along with Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin, former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann, for FRC's Israel Tour, June the 2nd through June the 12th, 2020. Whether you're sailing on the Sea of Galilee, standing in the ruins of Capernaum, or journeying up to Jerusalem, Israel is unlike any other place on earth. You'll relive the final earthly days of Jesus as you pray in the Garden of Gethsemane. You look upon Golgotha and stand in the Garden Tomb. The reality of his story will come alive in a transformative way. This one-of-a-kind tour will not only allow you to explore the land of the Bible and the roots of our Christian faith, you'll also hear firsthand from some of Israel's political, defense, and religious leaders. Join us June the 2nd through June the 12th for this life-changing experience. For more information, visit TonyPerkins.com or call 844-872-5155. This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, as we were just talking about before the break, or going into the break, that the reason the left is so intent on stopping this president, putting him out of office, regardless of what it takes, is because of what he's doing, what the policies that are emanating from this administration, what they're doing. And here's a good example. Nearly 900 abortion clinics have lost funding from federal family planning dollars. That's Title X funding. For insiders, you may know what that means, but it's family planning dollars. Millions go to these clinics. What President Trump did is he put in what's called a co-location rule. We've talked about it before, but essentially it is this. If you do abortions or refer for abortions, you cannot have Title X funding. All right? You can't do it in the same facility. So if you want to do abortions and you want federal dollars to do family planning, well, you're going to have two different locations. Well, Power to Decide, a pro-abortion group, released a report that has estimated that 876 abortion clinics nationwide lost Title X funding after their clinics, most of them, many of them Planned Parenthood clinics, refused to comply with the Trump rule. Joining me now in studio with analysis on this is Connor Simmelsberger, who, by the way, just married a month ago and here to tell us everything about how to have a successful marriage. So, Connor, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Yeah, the marriage advice might have to wait for next time, Tony. But yeah, I'd love to give some insight on this Title X rule.
All right, well, let's. I'll take that one then. We'll save the marriage counseling and or the marriage advice till later. Connor is our legislative assistant here at FRC. All right, so this is good news. I mean, this shows that policies matter, and the policies taken by this administration, which was not taken obviously by the Obama administration nor by the Bush administration. Mm-hmm. Is actually resulting in this severing of this forced partnership between taxpayers and Planned Parenthood.
Yep, that's exactly right. Around 900 clinics, as the report said, no longer receive Title X grants because they chose to prioritize their love for abortion over helping women in need who need these family planning services. And they are not happy about losing this money. So the pro-abortion groups are out in full swing to not just bash the president for this policy, but to even delegitimize his ability to do federal rulemaking. They put these studies out that claim that without Planned Parenthood receiving these funds, no women, or there's going to be a large gap in women that will receive these dollars.
But they could receive the dollars.
Yep. They could have decided to say, you know what, we'd rather provide the care that we say is in our mission to provide care for all people and all women. But instead, they chose to they wanted to continue to refer for abortions and continue to be co-located with the abortion services themselves.
And the rationale behind this, Connor, is just to say that, look, we want a clear line of separation. Dollars are fungible, and so we want to make sure that the overhead for an abortion clinic is not being paid out of dollars that come from family planning, federal dollars, taxpayers' money.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And what's so almost despicable about this is something they love to do, make federal laws, make federal rulemaking, whenever it's used against them. When a pro-life administration like Trump comes in and pushes a good rule that's, like I said, been years in the making since 93, when President Clinton issued that all Title X clinics have to refer for abortion. They didn't even have a choice. They had to. It left many pro-life groups out in the fray where they couldn't, because of a moral obligation. They couldn't apply for these funds. And now here's Planned Parenthood almost like acting like they have a right to these funds and almost wanting to dictate to the federal government what they can and can't decide to do with their federal grant dollars. So once and for all, a pro-life administration came in and said, this is the way the grants are going to be issued out. And if you're going to be a federal grantee under the Title X program, you have to abide by these common sense separate rules on abortion policy.
And this has gone to court. And the Ninth Circuit, of all places, allowed this rule to go into effect.
Yeah, that is a great win, and that really leads back to the number of judges that the Trump administration and the Republican Senate have been able to push through. Not a friendly circuit to conservatives, the Ninth Circuit out there, but actually two favorable rulings, and we're waiting to see what they finally rule on whether this can go into effect permanently. It's in effect temporarily while they fight that out in the courts, but some good rulings across the courts, and just a continued push by President Trump, his administration, and the judicial nominees to protect life across the board.
So, Connor, how much money are we talking about here?
It's millions of dollars. Now, we know Planned Parenthood gets about $500 million from the Medicaid program. So compared to that, it's a small chunk, but it's a lot of money. We can confirm at least $16 million in direct grants, but we know there's even a lot more from these subgrantees and, like you said, 900, which many of those are Planned Parenthood's gave up dollars. So lots of millions of dollars on the line, and they're feeling it. It's the first time in a long time the government said no to providing them dollars, and they're squirming a little bit, and they know that then could be coming to their tie to federal money.
But the women who need the services are not feeling the pinch, because the money is still going to clinics that actually provide health care services. So it's not a cut in federal services. It's simply not giving it to abortion clinics.
Yep, and actually just I think a week or two ago, HHS repurposed the $33 million that was withdrawn from Planned Parenthood and gave it to the existing groups that will continue to comply with the new rule.
All right, Connor, thanks so much for joining us.
All right, thank you, Tanner.
And I look forward to that marriage advice.
I'll be working on that for you.
Okay, all right, very good. All right, folks, don't go away. Speaking of marriage, we're going to talk about men next. General Jerry Boykin joins me. I'm going to teach him a few things about manhood when we get back. All right, don't go away. We're going to talk about a new adventure for the Family Research Council, Stand Courageous, Men's Conferences, Masculinity Under Attack. Men, it's time to man up. We're going to talk about it next. Don't go away. Hello, this is Tony Perkins, President of the Family Research Council here in Washington, D.C. I want to invite you to join Luana and myself, along with Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin, former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann, for FRC's Israel Tour, June the 2nd through June the 12th, 2020. Whether you're sailing on the Sea of Galilee, standing in the ruins of Capernaum, or journeying up to Jerusalem, Israel is unlike any other place on earth. You'll relive the final earthly days of Jesus as you pray in the Garden of Gethsemane. You look upon Golgotha and stand in the Garden Tomb. The reality of his story will come alive in a transformative way. This one-of-a-kind tour will not only allow you to explore the land of the Bible and the roots of our Christian faith, you'll also hear firsthand from some of Israel's political, defense, and religious leaders. Join us June the 2nd through June the 12th for this life-changing experience. For more information, visit TonyPerkins.com or call 844-872-5155.
Planned Parenthood is not pro-woman. For decades, the nation's leading abortion supplier has claimed to be the champion of women's rights, but nothing could be farther from the truth. Planned Parenthood has repeatedly violated the law and violated women, from aiding and abetting sex traffickers, covering up child sexual abuse, and selling the remains of aborted baby parts, to ignoring the devastating effects that abortion has on women's physical and mental health. From its racist eugenic roots to the targeting of vulnerable communities, Planned Parenthood is an organization that not only promotes a culture of death, but makes it a reality. In a new brochure from FRC, you will find evidence that will challenge your assumptions about Planned Parenthood and equip you with the information you need to be a true champion for women and the lives of unborn children. To order this brochure and to download your free digital copy, visit frc.org/Planned Parenthood.
We live in a time of great political division, and this division only intensifies during campaign season. The toxic tone in politics can be discouraging, which makes it a very real temptation for many Christians to wipe their hands of politics altogether. After all, if God is sovereign and controls the heart of the king, as Proverbs says, do we really need to get involved in the messy world of politics? Because political engagement can be divisive, shouldn't Christians abandon politics and direct their energies toward more spiritual pursuits? Christians are called to submit every area of their life to God, which includes how they engage in politics. But they are called to engage biblically. This requires Christians to be prepared to follow their political theology to its logical end and vote for candidates and parties that support clear biblical values. For more information on the Christians' call to engage in politics, visit frc.org/engage. That's frc.org/engage.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us. The website, TonyPerkins.com. We talk about these stories frequently. The fact that manhood, masculinity, is under attack. Biblical masculinity is under attack. I mean, the confusion, the gender confusion. We talk about the tragic story of this 7-year-old boy whose father, trying to intervene to keep his estranged wife from transitioning this boy from a 7-year-old boy, from a boy to a girl. And, of course, we talked about this yesterday, but a jury in Texas, by a vote of 12 to 1 or 11 to 1, said the father cannot intervene. Tragic. But these cases are so frequent, and we see the disintegration of the family, and with that becomes the identity, the disintegration of the identity of children, confused about who they are and what they are. The father plays a central role in this. And this is why I believe for the last 40 years, really in the last two decades, intently, the attack has been on fathers and on men, an effort to try to emasculate men in this culture. You see it on TV. You see it in the sitcoms. It is rampant. What are we to do about it? Well, joining me now to talk about this, Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin, Executive Vice President here at the Family Research Council. General, welcome back to Washington Watch.
I'm glad to be with you, Tony, especially on this subject.
Well, you've led men.
Yes.
Manhood is essential to the survival of a culture,
right,
of a nation,
right,
and a family.
Mm-hmm.
And manhood, and I want to say, when I say manhood, I want to say biblical manhood.
Masculinity, biblical masculinity.
It's under attack.
That absolutely is.
But we are going to do something about it.
Yeah, I remember when David was about to die, he called his son forward and said, be a man. A man had a context. A man had a meaning in biblical times. And I think that what we're trying to do here Tony, at the Family Research Council, is we're trying to reach as many men as we can now and tell them it's okay to be a man. It's okay to be what God's called you to do, and to lay out for them what we believe is the biblical structure for masculinity.
And someone say, well, why are you at the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C.? You work on policy issues. Why are you focused on manhood? Well, I mean, my response to that would be, well, you know, yes, we deal with policy. We deal with all of this, all the stuff we talk about here on the program, all the policy issues we work with. In large part, the reason we're having to do these things is because of the, as I mentioned earlier, the implosion of the family, the disintegration of the family, which links right back to men. So we're dealing with the symptoms. What if we'd started dealing with the source? And I think that's why we're looking at men.
Yeah, we're the Family Research Council. The man is a critical part of the family structure. And, you know, the families are falling apart now at an unprecedented rate, and a lot of that has to do with absentee fathers or men that are in the home that are just simply not fulfilling their role as men. And I think it's very clear that the families are suffering as a result of that, and we want to reach these men and encourage them to get on the ball here and be what God's called you to be as the man in that family.
Now, these conferences, they're called Stand Courageous Men's Conferences. They're beginning in just a couple of weeks. We're going to have about a dozen of these in various parts of the country coming up November the 15th through the 16th. We'll be right outside of Cincinnati, Ohio. Then in January, we've got several of these scheduled. We'll be in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. We'll be in Pensacola, Florida. We'll be in North Carolina. We'll be in Naples, Florida in March. We've got quite a few of these planned.
Mm-hmm.
This is not to beat up on men. It's to affirm men and give them the tools to, you know, wherever they are in their masculine journey, wherever they're at, whether at the beginning or whether in the middle or in the end, to help them finish strong. And with an emphasis on those younger men that have children at home, because their children desperately need them to be the leaders in the home, to be the instructor in their life. I'm going to let you hit on the five aspects that we'll be dealing with in these conferences.
Well, yeah, we are. We're going to be encouraging men to be a defender, to protect those things that he holds dear, to include not only his family but his values.
And that's both emotional, but it's also physical.
It is both.
I mean, a man, and I know that, you know, we're from our listeners, we won't get anything except for the left who listen to this program. I mean, their eyes are rolling back in their head right now because we're saying men should be the protector. Oh, what a chauvinistic statement.
Yeah, right.
But you know what? I don't care what you call it. Right. It's reality. I still hold doors for women, and I've taught my boys to do the same.
As do I. Well, if you just take a realistic look at what's happening in society, you see so many situations where somebody that is helpless or that needs help is being abused. It may be a woman being raped on the street, or it may be a homeless man that's being, you know, harassed by some punk somewhere. A man would step in and say, do all he can to
stop
that.
Absolutely.
That's what a man's role is. So he's a defender. He's a protector. The man is also a provider, you know, but he provides more than just for the financial needs. You know, the man's got to provide direction for a family. The man's got to, you know, provide identity for that family. And we fail to realize how important identity is. And that is one of the reasons that there are so many young men growing up today that have that are wandering rather aimlessly because they have no identity. They don't know who they are because they don't know who their father is. And that's plaguing our society. The man is also a teacher. He's an instructor. The man is the one that teaches things in the home, and part of that is teaching the Word of God to the best of his ability. He may not be an educated man, but just teaching the Word of God by reading the Bible to his family. But any man that can read, can study, and know more about the Bible. And the man is also what we will call a battle buddy. You know, every man needs a battle buddy. Every man needs some other man that he can deal with on a very intimate level in terms of sharing his anxieties, his fears, his concerns, his elations, and those kinds of things. But it's the guy that is never going to compromise you. It's the guy that takes a lot of investment in that kind of relationship.
And it's a David and Jonathan type relationship.
It is absolutely David and Jonathan is the perfect example. I'd say a secondary example would be Joshua and Caleb. Mm-hmm. These, you know, like-minded battle buddies that they stood for the same things. They believed. That's a
right.
simple word,
right.
period. They believed. And they said, yeah, all these guys are telling you that, this is a beautiful place, but we can't take it. We say we can take it because God told us it was our land. Let's go now, boss. Let's go. And Moses wandered in the desert for 40 years because he listened to the majority report. So your battle buddy may not be the one that is most popular with everybody around you, but he's the one that you know you can rely on. You know he'll be there. He'll be there when you need him. And then finally, the man is the priest. We're the spiritual head. Now, look, that does not mean that women don't make a lot of decisions in the home. That's not the
yeah.
point. And it doesn't mean they don't have a role in the spiritual health of that family. But the man is the spiritual head, and therefore he's the priest
yeah.
in the family.
Well, the studies bear this out, that when I'm grateful for the women, the mothers who, in the absence of a
yep.
father
mm-hmm.
being the spiritual leader, are stepping in and filling mm-hmm. that void. But the studies make very clear that faith is not necessarily passed on to the children when the mother is the spiritual leader. The percentage of children who will follow in the faith and the faith becomes theirs is much higher when the father is the spiritual leader of the home.
Yes, and I think that all of the studies will bear that out. When the father comes to Christ, his influence on the family and the spiritual climate in that family is greater. But let me say this. I want to encourage everybody that is hearing this to find one of these conferences. Go to our website. It's called Stand Courageous, and you'll find where we're doing these, and there'll be more coming on that website soon. But I want to invite them to come be there because you do not understand unless you're there just how the Holy Spirit moves in these conferences.
Yeah, we've done a few of these. In fact, you've been on before. We've talked about it. It's been several months back, but you've been doing them for quite some time. We've done a couple of pilot projects, and they've been just overwhelmingly received, and
yes.
so that's why we've decided to embark upon this for this. Over the next 12 months, we're going to be doing 12 of these in various parts of mm-hmm. the country. And easy way to go to TonyPerkins.com, and there on the website under resources, just click on that, and you'll see down at the bottom, Stand Courageous Conferences. You click on it, and we just have, I think, the first four or five that we've got scheduled are up there, but you can register. If you don't happen to live in one of those areas, you know somebody does, forward it on to them. I mean, in this conference, it's usually most of them be Friday night and Saturday, the bulk of Saturday. We'll have different speakers. Stu Weber.
Stu Weber, yeah. My battle buddy, by the way. But a long time with Promise Keepers when it was in its heyday, and a pastor of a big church in
Author
Oregon.
Of several books.
Author of several books. Best book I've ever read for men, actually.
Yeah. We've got Larry Jackson's going to be part of some of these.
Bishop Larry
Jackson.
He's
going to be there with all of them.
Yeah,
those.
Bishop Larry Jackson, who I think he's still the chaplain for the North Carolina football team, for the Panthers there in Charlotte, you know, the Charlotte Panthers. So, but a great guy, and he was also with Promise Keepers for about 20 years. And then you and I will speak, and we'll have some breakout sessions with some good people.
And so we're going to be giving men the tools. We're going to be affirming them in their biblical masculinity, giving them the tools. I mean, and look, you don't have to have it together to come. This is all about trying to get it together and help men in this journey. And they're going to walk away with resources. So we're not going to just, you know, say, hey, you need to do this and let them go. We're actually going to put things in their hands. And then what is probably most exciting about this is that the journey, that's just the beginning. Mm-hmm. We're going to be walking with these men through the process and helping them become the spiritual leaders of their homes, and we're going to give them the tools. And I'm excited about this because I think the impact is going to be profound, not just on the men that are there, but on their families as they begin to take on the leadership role of their families. And then what happens is that the churches that they're a part of become stronger. Mm-hmm. And when their churches become stronger, filled with men who will stand courageous, then we begin to see our communities reflect those truths that are preached in those churches. And when that happens, we see a country that can be changed.
Tony, absolutely. And look, like this weekend, I did a men's conference out in just outside of Portland, Oregon. And, you know, they actually let women into this men's conference. There were not a lot, but there were women there, wives, that were there. And the people that I got the greatest feedback from at the end of the conference were the women. And what they were doing is they were encouraging me and their men, and I was telling them, we're going to be doing men's conferences, and we're going to be coming straight at you with what we think you need to be focused on to be the man that God's called you to be. And the women were the most feedback came from them as they were saying, this is the kind of thing that we want our men to be.
Yeah.
And I had women coming to the book table with tears saying, I've never seen my husband as attentive. I've never seen him, you know, go up to have another man bless him or affirm him, you know. So those are the kinds of things the Holy Spirit has, and those that we've done thus far,
yeah,
and that we started down in Houma, Louisiana, I think that the Holy Spirit has shown up in a mighty way, and, you know, it's beyond my ability to explain or even to understand fully. But God has been there with us on these conferences.
I think it speaks to the great need.
It does.
That exists for men who have been beaten down by the culture, who've been told that they're not relevant. Mm-hmm. Everything in the culture speaks contrary to biblical masculinity.
And a very important thing is the men that are going to be up there, maybe with the exception of you because you're different, but we have all been there. We can all stand up and say, gentlemen, we're no different than you are. Each one of us is speaking.
Are you
speaking
saying
here.
All of the others joined the Army and I'm the only one that was in the
you
Marine
are
Corps?
You're the odd duck on this one because,
right.
You know, we were Army guys,
that's
me and
right.
Stu and I.
Now you and Stu
yeah.
are, yeah.
So, but right. The point is, this is not just throwing scripture at you.
No.
It's talking to you from our experience.
These are all men who have been on the journey.
Right.
And we've learned
right.
on the journey.
Exactly.
And you know, the Lord has enabled us to share a few things.
That's right.
And for me, nothing is more important than investing in your children and seeing your children succeed.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm in that process where I'm beginning to see that fruit that my children are bearing. And I want to see other fathers step into that role of leadership in their homes.
I agree.
General, thanks so much for joining us. Look forward to being on the road with the Stand Courageous conferences. To find out more, go to TonyPerkins.com. All right, we're out of time for today. Thanks so much for joining us. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, prepared, and taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.